The first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
Team Bubble Watch is more bubble than it has ever been. Welcome into your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast, Scrambled Eggs, everybody. Joe McCain and Phil Bush here with you. And Phil, I have never felt so bubblicious as I have right now.
It's like we're in just this like vat of like bubble gum or something. Is this how the rest of America feels when their teams are on the bubble? Because I might need to go to a hospital.
Stomach will be in knots over the next week for Marquette basketball fans. We're going to talk about the tournament, Marquette's hopes of getting in, and what we expect for the Big East tournament coming up a little bit later. But we're going to start with just a memorable senior day and a memorable last regular season anyway, game at the Bradley Center. Hopefully it was the last game at the Bradley Center for Marquette basketball. Phil, you were there. Take me through, first of all, just the emotions of senior day and the last game at the Bradley Center.
Yeah, everyone kind of showed up. It was interesting. There was a lot of people. I, in fact, went with my old school original We Are Marquette Fanatics t-shirt from like 2000 or something like that. It still fits because I'm actually skinnier than I was then. So it worked out okay. But a lot of people kind of flashing throwbacks. And it was a well-lubricated stadium because it was throwback day with $2 beers as well.
That'll get it done.
Yeah. So – and the stadium was full. Kind of a great atmosphere to start. Rousey's kind of send-off was, I think, well-received. I mean, I think it's fair to say that Rousey is – well liked. I don't know that I would describe him as beloved by the fan base, but certainly the fan base appreciated him.
Yeah, I mean, it's senior
him.
Day. It's his last game. Give the guy some dap. He's worked his butt off.
Exactly.
Even though he can be maddening to watch sometimes, he's given Marquette all he has for 3 years that he's been with the program. So I like having senior day at the beginning, by the way, as opposed to the end.
I do too, because it you get more butts in seats.
Yeah. That, and plus you guard against the possibility of a loss and a very real bummer of a senior day after a loss. And plus, you know, because it's before the game, there's no way it's going to drag on forever. It's like, all right, well, you know, let's give this guy his love, give him a round of applause, and let's get the game on. So I think for those reasons, I love doing senior day before the last game, as opposed to for a long time there, Marquette did it after the game.
Yeah, I totally agree. So it was well done, and then like I said, the atmosphere is pretty good. I think towards the end of the first half, I think the crowd kind of went, oh man, here we go again. But when the team needed the crowd with 10 minutes to go, they were up and on their feet and actively engaged. And you can never say how much of a difference the crowd makes, but having 18,000 fans in that stadium all on their feet screaming, I don't know. It didn't hurt, I don't think.
Yeah, certainly. And, boy, the energy really picked up in the second half as Marquette seemingly couldn't miss. I mean, they had – you know, we've been wondering all year if we're ever going to have a game where Howard and Rousey are all on. I think that's about as close as we've been.
I think between this game and the Georgetown game.
Yeah, I mean, just – they were shooting the ball incredibly. And I would say, you know, I didn't do much digging researching this, but I feel like that's one of the best senior day performances by a senior for Marquette in recent memory. Just because Rousey hit some ridiculous shots, some vintage Rousey heat checks that fell and really kind of gave Marquette the lead and energy late in the game. Rousey was really terrific in his final home game.
Oh, my God. And the last 4 or 5 minutes, I mean – he basically put the team on his back. You know, Howard kind of put on his theatrics at the start and middle part of the second half, hitting some threes and kind of keeping the team in it and letting them claw back. But then Rousey just went ballistic with threes in, you know, from Kenosha and another one from the other side of Lake Michigan, that the fact that they went in was just kind of nuts.
Yeah, he hit one from like the Al
logo, which was
on the
right
court,
in front of where we were sitting.
And he hit another one that the one where he was kind of in the middle of the floor, his back heel was on the logo, like the edge of the U and the MU at center court. Like his foot was on it.
Yeah.
It was, I mean, that one should have been worth four. But
well,
yeah,
it was hilarious because in the post game interview, I don't know if it went out on the national feeds, but the local news had it, and they asked him about some of those shots, and he said, a couple of them, I didn't quite realize how far out I was until that ball took a little longer to get there than I thought it would, and I was like, all right, if you have no idea you're that far out, you are in some sort of zone.
Yeah, I did hear that soundbite. Yeah, that was funny after the game. like that's funny to think about. It's like when he lets it go, you're used to the ball being in the air X number of seconds, and it's like, wow, it's still in the air. I'm way back there.
Yeah, it was kind of – well, and it was hilarious because the one that he hit from the Al logo, like I said, that was right in front of us. I had a great look at it. And the Creighton players kind of they were fighting to cover Hauser on the screen and roll down into the corner, and they kind of left Rousey alone and were scrambling to come back to him. But I think they kind of went, man, we're way out here. He's not going to take that shot. And Rousey just kind of was like sat there for a second, going, well, if nobody's going to come out here, I guess I'm going to go. And yep. Sure enough,
you give him some space when he's feeling it. And you give him a little space. I mean, that's about as good as it's going to get from Rousey. I mean he had 26 points on 8 of 15 shooting. He knocked down 6 threes. He had 8 rebounds in the game and 8 assists. He had 4 turnovers, which is not great, but certainly not bad when you've got 8 assists and you're shooting that well. I mean, that's really about as good as a game as you're going to get from Rousey. And then Howard just hit some impossible shots. You know, just at his size, some of the shots he gets off over taller defenders just continue to amaze me.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, I think they all played well. Howard and Rousey and Hauser, like you said, played well together. And who knows? Maybe we turned a corner. I mean, that same thing happened in the Georgetown game, right? This past Monday, that all three of them kind of played well together, which is not something we're used to.
No, yeah. Normally, it's one or the other, and maybe if we're lucky, we get two guys, but. Yeah, maybe – I don't know if I'll go turn a corner and be that optimistic, but there's no denying it was a good week for Marquette. They desperately needed 2 wins to get to 9-9 to have even a prayer at an at-large bid, and so they did that. They took care of business. As frustrating as the week before was with that loss to DePaul, they stayed relevant, and so I guess there's some reason for some optimism heading into the Big East tournament in Madison Square Garden this week, now that the Big Ten has warmed the place up for us.
Yeah, thanks for go ahead and leave the lights on. We'll get the floor swapped out, but thanks for getting all the hoops warmed up and ready to go. So,
yeah, I will say this though: as much as we've joked about the Big Ten having their conference tournament early, I did watch a good bit of it because it was on in the middle of the day. It was good to see some quality basketball in the middle of the afternoon, and there were some good games, but it is still kind of funny that they played their tournament.
Yeah, but I mean,
for everybody else.
Yeah, I mean, if they want to keep doing that, I'm not going to care. I'm not going to fight them on it. But I mean, they can sit around and for a week waiting for the committee to decide their fate. That's
yeah, we're going to talk about a couple of those bubble teams in the Big Ten a little bit later in the show. But first, Phil, let's. Before, do you want? Is there anything you want to break down else from the Creighton game before we move on talking to Big East tournament?
Well, we should break down because last time we saw Creighton, we saw a near disaster in the first half, and with Marcus going out and getting injured, and which turned out to be, I mean, not insignificant, but not significant. And then the team kind of put it back together, decided to play Rousey. By necessity, they played Rousey as the only short guard for that game, as well as the St. John's game at home, and went to 2-3 zone, and it worked. And then as soon as Howard came back, we had the DePaul debacle. So in the game, in the Creighton game, they played almost no 2-3 zone and played Rousey and Howard together at least 20, if not 25 minutes. What do we make of that? Are we just resigned to our fate? I mean, we have it on fairly reliable authority that it's just going to be those two guys, ride or die with those two guys together.
Yeah. I mean, I said last week Wojo is going to make the tournament with those two or go to the NIT trying. We'll see if that's accurate. But, yeah, I mean, and I'll say this for Wojo. It worked Sunday, or Saturday, I should say. It worked on Saturday, and maybe that's the vision he's had all year. And if you get performances like that all year, it's like, all right, well, let's play them together then. But there also were some stretches, though, where they went to the 2-3 zone when only one of the smaller guards was on the floor. I don't know. I guess looking back, I didn't notice as much. Like, I don't know if they went very much zone when both of them were out there, because it's probably a bad idea anyway. But
they did a couple of times, but it was yeah, I think it was maybe twice or three times at most.
But I do think it is good that they have at least discovered the 2-3 zone as a decent option to have, something else to do when you're getting torn up on man-to-man. And so if Wojo gets in a situation in the Big East tournament where the other team is just scoring at will, maybe he will at least be aware that that is an option at his disposal. Even if it isn't an excellent zone, it is something he can do just as a nice change of pace if he has to slow down somebody who's really tearing him up. So,
well, and one thing I do want to mention from the game, and I saw it and I actually kind of tweeted about it, and it was one of those things that was the absolute right thing to do, and it got the exact opposite result of what you would think. But I think it was with about a minute left, and Marquette up 4 or 5, I want to say, at that point. Anyway, and maybe there was less time, but Wojo pulled both Howard and Rousey to go with a long defensive lineup. He had Elliott, Kane, I want to say it was Helt, Hauser, and Sakar in. And I think it was with, like, what, Creighton had like 10 or 12 seconds left on the shot clock or something like that. So he's cognizant that having one, let alone two of the point guards out there is defensively deficient. So he made the right change and went defensive. Unfortunately, that defense gave up a bucket in like 3 seconds. Oh, was it a 3-point shot they made? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, I don't remember the play. I'm just kind of going off what you're saying.
It was late in the game where they went absolutely defensive lineup just to get a stop or get. Yeah, it was Creighton went for a fast three. It was whoever 24 on Creighton is. I'm remembering now. He hit a three with like 6 seconds coming off the clock.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe so, but yeah, kind of going back to your original question that kind of led to this discussion is that. Maybe Wojo is slowly warming up to the idea that splitting the guards up is a good idea, but I think he's only going to do it as a change of pace. It will never be like the go-to strategy or, you know, the comfort lineup, I guess. The comfortable lineup is still going to be the guys who start. It's going to be Howard and Rousey together with Howard and Rousey together with Hauser, and then, you know, whoever else, whether it's Sakar or Theo John and Matt Hill, Kane, whoever. But
more
often than not, he wants Howard and Rousey out there together because he loves the offense that they're going to bring together out there. Even though I think sometimes I don't know if they necessarily feed off each other, although they did on Saturday. So I will concede that, and hopefully that is a trend that continues. In the Big East tournament, because if you're asking me, I think they're going to need at least one win to feel comfortable at all heading into selection.
Oh, they for sure have to win one. If they lose to DePaul again, we can get the Bradley Center warmed up again because we're going to have a home NIT game to play if they lose to DePaul in the Big East tournament.
Right. So let's maybe talk about the Big East tournament a little bit. And I'm sure, many of you have seen the bracket by now, so you would know that Marquette is the 7 seed because Seton Hall won on Saturday to claim the 6 seed. There was still a chance Marquette could get the 6 seed by finishing in a tie with Seton Hall and thus winning a tiebreaker because they swept the Pirates, but didn't happen that way, so Seton Hall grabbed the 6 seed. Marquette will play DePaul, and if they can win that game, they would have a date with the 2nd seed, Villanova. So I look at the bracket, Phil, and I think there are two possibilities that, in my opinion, are pretty cut and dry. There is, you lose to DePaul, in my opinion, you are definitely out. But if you beat DePaul and beat Villanova, I'd feel pretty good saying that Marquette is in. Would you agree with both of those?
I agree 100% with both of those. In fact, I would say it's a stone cold lock in both directions. If we lose to DePaul, it's a stone cold lock that we're out. And if we win those two games, beat DePaul and beat Villanova, it's a stone cold lock that we're in. I mean, there. If you beat Villanova, there is nothing, you know, kind of any justification for not being in goes away. And so Marquette would be a lock. They might be a, 11 or 12 seed and playing in Dayton, but there is no way they're not in.
Yeah, we've kind of broken this down many times over the last month or so, kind of guessing what Marquette needed. And in some respects, I think I was right. In some respects, I think I was wrong. I'll say I was wrong maybe declaring the season over, especially after the last loss to DePaul, because it wasn't over necessarily, but I will say I will stand by what I've said, that Marquette needs 11 wins in some combination to get in, and I've also said that 9-9 by itself is not enough, because I think if you're just good with just 9-9 right now and saying a loss to DePaul on Wednesday is fine, I just can't see that as being okay. Being with that resume and then having two losses to DePaul, I think, considering how competitive this bubble is, that just seems bad to me, and I would not be optimistic at all. In fact, I would almost say it is a guaranteed out if you lose a second time to DePaul.
I do think it is a guaranteed out. I agree with you. Let's put it this way. At 9-9, Marquette has not, even with that DePaul loss, I mean, there's enough, you know, if you look at the strength of schedule and the RPI and all the metrics they're using, the quadrants, all of that, Marquette has not given the committee any reason to leave them out, but they also haven't given the committee much of a reason to include them, right?
Right. So, I mean, they have some nice wins, but they don't have – like, they played a tough schedule, but there's not – especially in the non-conference, the schedule was challenging, but they don't have a lot of great wins in the non-conference.
Right.
A sweep over Creighton is nice. A sweep over Seton Hall is nice, but there's not a whole lot of wow in there.
Well, yeah, and not only that, I suspect what the committee may do. Like, if they're trying to decide between, you know, a Marquette and somebody else, I don't know, we'll make it up, like an Oklahoma State or something like that, or heck, as much as it would pain me, a team like Penn State, right? The Marquette's, like, again, numbers and records are maybe better or provide a justification for including Marquette. But some of those teams that I mentioned have, like, high-level wins, right? They, you know, Penn State swept Ohio State, and some of these other teams may have some a few bad losses. But what they also have is a few great wins. And Marquette has a bunch of good wins, but when it comes to the top three in conference, you know, Villanova, Xavier, and Butler.
And then they throw in Purdue.
Yeah, and Wichita State, right? Like, we've played and lost to a bunch of really good teams, but I think the committee's going to favor those teams that have proven that they could beat a really good team, because that's going to make for more excitement in the tournament than is a team that'll go down swinging but will more than likely lose to a better team.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's the tough part. So, like, we're kind of in agreement that losing to DePaul, you're out. Beating Villanova, you're in. But then there's a third scenario, which let's be honest, is the most likely scenario if you're playing the odds for this week, yep. Is Marquette going 1-1. Beating DePaul, losing to Villanova. I'd say if you had to bet on one of those three options, that's the one you're probably going to go with. And to me, that is just that is vintage bubble watch. I mean, Marquette, I think, is right on the line. It's just going to depend on so many other things. What is your gut feeling on a 1-1 performance this week and where that would leave Marquette?
See, that's the tough part, because I think a 1-1 gives the committee no reason to exclude them, but it leaves the door wide open for other teams to give the committee reason to include them and leave Marquette out. I think right now Marquette, let's assume they go 1-1. I think that leaves Marquette as maybe, I'll say, one of the top 66 teams. You know, they maybe they're in the last four in. Maybe they're just in the you know, maybe they're like the 64th team or something like that. So with a 1-1 finish, I think that leaves them right there. But what that doesn't leave is much error, room for error for other teams jumping ahead that maybe go deep in their conference tournaments, right?
Yeah, see,
Somebody.
I mean, the tough thing as at the time we're recording this on Sunday, if you go to Bracket Matrix, Marquette is right there on the bubble. They're among the first four out at the last update that I'm looking at. Again, they'll probably change by the time you guys are all listening to this, but they're on 12 out of 100 brackets, but they're among the first four out, so they are just right on the border. And as you said there, Phil, like, that's the thing about a win over DePaul and a loss to Villanova. Beating DePaul doesn't impress you, and losing to Villanova doesn't hurt you, but you're just kind of treading water. You're just like, you're probably not moving, so you're just hoping no one really jumps ahead of you, and you kind of maybe need some teams that are ahead of you to maybe come back a little bit and have some tough losses. So it's so tough to get a read, as like people have been debating on Twitter. As we've kind of moving into a new era with the committee, as they're going to use a few different metrics. The big buzzword, of course, is quadrants right now. Marquette does have, I believe it's now five quadrant one wins.
That's
So, I
correct.
mean, that's a pretty good number. I mean, if you're talking about being a bubble team, that's a nice number. It's going to be better than a lot of teams. But, you know, and they don't have any terrible losses, so there's no quadrant four. I think that DePaul is a quadrant three loss, so that's not good. That's why you definitely can't afford another one. But yeah, I just it's kind of tough to get a read on where 10 wins, being nine regular season and one postseason, would leave Marquette. To me, if that happens, and I think that is probably the most likely scenario a week from now, is that we're going to be sitting here on Selection Sunday after going 1-1 in the Big East tournament, just biting our nails. Half of us saying I think we're in, and half of us are going to be saying I think we're out. And it's just going to depend on all these bubble teams. And there's just so much to keep an eye on this week. So many teams to root for and against, just to improve those slim odds of getting in. This is, as long as I've been a Marquette fan, which is 18 years now, this is as vintage bubble team as Marquette has ever been since I've been following the team.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but I think literally you cannot get more bubble than this. I mean, this is going to
Right.
be, they're either going to be the last team out or they're going to be the last team in. I they're barring a run all the way to probably Sunday. I don't think. Well, I suppose we
They get a
said that
bye.
if, yeah, you know, if they beat Villanova, and you know, people who are saying, well, I don't know that even beating Villanova gets us a lock. Beating Villanova gets us a lock. So.
Yeah, just I there aren't going to be many bubble teams that are going to have a better week than that. Because like right now, there are so many teams that I think are close. There's got to be what, like 10, 12, maybe 15 teams battling for bubble spots. There just aren't going to be many teams that are going to have a chance to beat a team like Villanova this week. So when all these teams are close, like I think championship week is going to play a role as the committee is like looking, starting when they're kind of gathering, what, Monday, Tuesday, and start breaking down the teams they're considering. They're going to be keeping an eye on these conference tournaments, giving you a chance to make a closing argument. And so if you can go out and beat a team like Villanova, that's a hell of a closing argument.
Right.
And say, wow, they beat Villanova, and we're going to probably give Villanova a one or a two seed. So, like, that is just a golden opportunity that you hope Marquette will give themselves a chance to do.
Absolutely.
So, Phil, with the bubble this complicated, I thought we would come up with a rooting guide for this week's episode. Maybe this is maybe better in written form, but I'm sure some, whether it's Paint Touches, Anonymous Eagle, they'll kind of come up with a lot of this stuff during the week. But I thought we'd kind of go through some teams that we have our eyes on, teams that we're either rooting for or against as championship week really gets into full swing. Sound good?
Yeah, sounds good. And I'll make sure to the publish you full credit should go to you. You spent your Sunday morning putting this guide together, so I'll make sure this goes along with the podcast, so you guys can kind of visually see what we're talking about when we
right, so
run through this.
Let's start with some of the teams we're rooting against. So other teams on the bubble, teams that we want to lose and lose early in championship week. First thing that jumped out to me, Phil, is how dangerously close the Pac-12 is to being a one-bid league.
Yeah, they're not good, right?
I mean, you know, like I would just, like with that, if you weren't paying attention, you think, ah, Pac-12, they got some good teams. It's pretty nice. But really, Arizona is the only stone-cold lock they have. Arizona State's probably in, but they have four bubble teams beyond that. like the 2 seed in the Pac-12 tournament is on the bubble. That's USC.
Well, that's why they play after dark, right? They don't want anyone to see how bad they are at basketball.
They don't actually. So these are the teams you are rooting against in the Pac-12: Washington, USC, UCLA, and Utah. And by the way, USC, Utah, and UCLA, that is your 2, 3, and 4 seed in the Pac-12 tournament.
Yeah, that's not great.
Like, somehow Arizona State, and like, their non-conference is strong enough, despite being the 9 seed in the Pac-12 tournament, they're probably going to get in. But, well,
and
so
see,
the first
that's the weird thing about the way these brackets and the bubbles and the resume works out, right? Like, you know, if Marquette had beaten DePaul or Seton Hall had lost to Butler last night, I mean, does that all of a sudden Marquette's a lock, right? And whereas Arizona State won a bunch of games up front and hasn't played well in the last 2 months, you know, like
exactly. So yeah, sometimes it's good to really load up the non-conference schedule, and it really helps them. But so in the Pac-12, you're rooting for Washington to lose its first game. That's a 7-10 game against Oregon State. They lose that, that's really bad for them. Now the winner of that game gets USC, who is the 2 seed. That's a team that's also on the bubble. So you are a huge fan of Oregon State right now, Marquette fans. You want Oregon State to beat Washington, then beat USC.
Because there is no way Oregon State, unless they win the whole thing, which, let's face it, they're not beating Arizona. But if Oregon State, even with those 2 wins, does not have a chance in the tournament at all.
Exactly. They're way out. And then the rest of the way, Utah and UCLA, the thing is, they got byes. So there's a good chance that like some of these teams are going to get some nice resume padding wins. I don't think the Pac-12 is going to be a 2-bid league. They're probably going to get 3 or 4. But, you know, Utah gets the winner of Oregon and Wazoo. UCLA gets the winner of Stanford, Cal. So you would love for one of those 2 teams to get upset by the team they play. So generally speaking, Pac-12, you're rooting for Oregon State and then a little bit of carnage on the other side of the bracket, with ultimately Arizona winning the whole thing. So that's kind of what you're looking at in the Pac-12. SEC now, 2 teams you're really rooting against. Mississippi State, they're in a 7-10 game against LSU, so go Tremont Waters. Just light it up like you did against Marquette, even though you lost, but ideally get a win. So you want LSU to beat Mississippi State, and then Alabama, who is probably going to get in the tournament, but, you know, a bad loss would probably, you know, not help them, but they're not going to have a bad loss because they're in an 8-9 game against A&M. Even though Dwayne Wilson will not be playing for A&M, you should still pull for the Aggies because the Aggies are probably comfortably in. So pull for the Aggies to beat Alabama so Alabama doesn't get a chance to get any really good wins, because then they would get Auburn after that. So you want Alabama to lose to Aggie, and you want Mississippi State to lose to Tremont Waters and LSU. So that's easy enough to root for. Just
right.
Go Tremont
Waters. And the other thing I do think, I mean, LSU is one of the few teams on our schedule that, like, and again, this is the weird thing, like, if LSU gets a win or a couple of wins in their tournament, I think they can go from a decent win to a good win. Like, I think they can move from a quadrant 3 to a quadrant 2 win.
Yeah, so maybe LSU beat Mississippi State, then beat Tennessee next. That would be ideal.
Right, exactly.
All right, so let's move on to the ACC. And this is easy for Marquette because you're probably rooting against these teams anyway. Because, you know, screw these teams. Syracuse,
they're the worst.
Louisville. Like, screw those Big East defectors. We don't like any of these teams. I will say, though, you know, screw them, they're a rival and all. But I do kind of feel for Notre Dame just because, you know, with Bonzi Colson, and like with their when their team's been healthy, they've been very good. But looking at their resume, they're probably out. They're going to be the toughest case for the committee, especially if they get a couple wins in the ACC tournament. Now their first game against Pitt is against Pitt, which is hilarious because Pitt is probably the worst power conference team in all of America. Didn't win a single game in the ACC.
And ever, right?
Yeah, like they're just really bad. So, but that would be totally typical of championship week if winless Pitt got a win. And so you actually do want some stall ball to come through for you in the ACC tournament, because if they beat Notre Dame, even though it sucks for Notre Dame with the injuries they've had, I would say that would be Notre Dame is definitely out if they lose to Pitt. But if Notre Dame beats Pitt, and then you, well, this may feel dirty, guys, but you're gonna have to root for Virginia Tech to beat Notre Dame.
Yeah, that would be a real problem to I mean, Notre Dame is the tough one, right? Even Seth Davis asked about it in the when interviewing the Creighton AD who's heading up the NCAA selection committee, about Notre Dame and the case that they get Bonzi back. Does that make them a better, improved team? I just don't know how they can make a case for Notre Dame without him coming back. But yeah,
that's the thing for Notre Dame. They just have to show it this week. Like if they beat, obviously they have to beat Pitt. They should definitely beat Virginia Tech if they want to get in. And then if they could beat Duke or just have a good showing against Duke, maybe they could at least show, look, we're a good team and we're healthy. But that's their problem. So again, we're rooting against that. So go Pitt. And if not, then go Virginia Tech. Rooting against Syracuse is also easy to do. They play Wake Forest, and they play the 14 seed. So go Danny Manning and the Demon Deacons. That's easy for me to cheer for because I got a kid I had on my show, Bryant Crawford, big fan of his. But so you want Wake Forest to beat Syracuse, and then another team that is easy to root against, Louisville. Although maybe it's a little different now that Patino's gone, but still, it's easy to root against Louisville. They're in an 8-9 game against Florida State. Florida State probably in regardless, so you're cheering for the Seminoles in that one.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I think Louisville's in. I think the big one that we need to keep out is Syracuse. Anything less, and we're in trouble, because I think Syracuse is one of the teams that could keep us out and bump us from, perhaps the last four in to the last four out.
Yeah, so rooting against Syracuse, Notre Dame, and Louisville really just comes naturally for Marquette fans, but just kind of go with your instincts on that one in the ACC tournament. So obviously you're cheering for the Powers to win that tournament, and we're going to get some more cheering for favorites a little bit later, but obviously you want Duke, North Carolina, Virginia, one of those three teams to win the ACC. Now, the Big 12 is a big old mess, because it seems like every team in the Big 12 is in the discussion for making the tournament, basically everybody except Iowa State, but the teams you're really kind of focusing in on is teams you're rooting against: Baylor, Kansas State, Texas, and maybe Oklahoma. Like, as crazy as this would have sounded 6 weeks ago, Oklahoma is not a lock to get in. Like, if they lose to Oklahoma State in their first game, I would be sweating a lot if I'm a Sooner fan. So you want to be cheering for Oklahoma State, who has had a knack for getting some big wins. They swept Kansas. Oklahoma State is the only team ever in the Big 12 to sweep Kansas.
Well, but I guess the question is, isn't Oklahoma State one of those teams? Like, that's kind of a can't win for trying, because if Oklahoma State beats Oklahoma, Oklahoma State's probably in. If Oklahoma wins,
are they that close? I don't know if Oklahoma State's really that close. I think they have too many bad losses. I don't think they're getting in. I think their non-conference really hurts them. Yeah, I don't think Oklahoma State's really in the discussion. Like, they're gonna have to play their way in. So, but like, the teams are really rooting against Texas. Texas is right there on the bubble with Marquette. They play Texas. They play Iowa State first, so that would be a definite like resume killer for Texas.
Yeah, and Texas was one of the games that really hurt us this past Saturday when they beat West Virginia. That kind of bumped them ahead of us, which was kind of what you were talking about the last week or two, was that Marquette really couldn't do a lot to help themselves, but other teams certainly could, and we just got on the wrong side of that in a number of instances where teams we were competing against had opportunities for bigger wins and got them.
Yes, that's the thing. If Texas beats Iowa State, then they could have a chance to really play their way, because they get Texas Tech next, who hasn't played that great down the stretch. So if Texas could beat Iowa State, then Texas Tech, that's bad for Marquette, because they could get good chances. Kansas State plays TCU, so you're going for the Frogs in that one, not Kansas. And Baylor, who has been surprisingly tough, but they get West Virginia, so you're cheering for Huggy Bear and the Mountaineers in that one, because keep Baylor. Baylor right now projected maybe one of the last few in, but so you got to root for getting. There are a lot. Big 12 is so deep. I really feel like they should have 7 or 8 teams in. But
the Big 12 is the number one rated conference according to Ken Palm, with the Big East being third. So you would argue that the Big 12 should probably get the largest percentage of their teams in.
Yeah, they should. I mean, the Big 12 is deep. Big 12's talented. Like, even like the ninth place team, Oklahoma State, really isn't that bad. I mean, like, that's a pretty tough team. But they're not going to get it just because somebody's going to take a bunch of losses to conference play, and they did this year. So, but, you know, basically what I'm saying is the Big 12 should have seven or eight teams in. We should be rooting for seven, not eight.
Correct.
Just,
yeah.
just maybe Oklahoma or Texas or Baylor to really kind of get kind of a rough end to the season.
Right.
Because we're assuming
in this scenario Marquette's 1-1, which means I suppose there's a scenario where Marquette is, even though they're the seventh seed in the Big East, you know, if Seton Hall or Providence gets trounced, I suppose you could make an argument that we're, you know, a top six team in the Big East. But yeah, I mean, if we're getting in, we're really getting in as the seventh Big East team.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think Seton Hall with that last win of the regular season, I think Seton Hall's a lock. I think they're getting in no matter what. But I think but I'd hate it for Providence, but, you know, every man for yourself here. So in the Big East, you are kind of rooting for Providence to lose their first game just to have one more loss on their resume and not one more nice win. So, yeah, you are kind of rooting against Providence. And the other teams, you know, their season's over. So Nebraska and Penn State, I guess they're just going to sit in there biting their nails in the Big Ten because, you know, their conference tournament's over. But so those are the last teams you're kind of keeping an eye on bubble watch. Wise as far as teams you're rooting to fail. So I don't know, most people seem to break down Nebraska and Penn State like Nebraska is certainly out and Penn State should probably be pessimistic.
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, Penn State's probably right near us, right? Like, I mean, the line may in fact come between us and Penn State, because I mean, Penn State's got some, they've got top 10 wins against Ohio State, two or three of them, right? So you know, it's a classic example of where they've got some really good wins that kind of make up for bad losses. But in total, I don't, you know, there's enough that you can make an argument that the Ohio State-Penn State matchup is just a favorable one for Penn State. I don't know if the committee takes that into account, but, you know, if you beat a team that's a otherwise top 10 team three times in a row, while not beating anyone else of that caliber, you know, that may be more of a matchup problem than anything. But, yeah. You know, we gotta hope that the committee looks at the Big Ten pessimistically, because we've talked about how it's kind of been garbage. But let's see if the committee thinks that.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, we'll see how the committee evaluates these teams. So that's a quick look at some of the teams you're rooting against this week. Again, real quick rundown: teams you want to lose and lose early: Washington, USC, UCLA, Utah, Mississippi State, Alabama, Syracuse, Notre Dame, Louisville, Baylor, Kansas State, Texas, Oklahoma. Boo all of them. Hope they all lose. By the way, I did say on Twitter this week, for the record, if Marquette does have to play in Dayton and play somebody, I would love to play Oklahoma. Like, I think that would be a wild game just to see Trae Young and how many points and assists and turnovers he has against Marquette and let Marquette's offense just go crazy on Oklahoma's. And basically we could see what's basically happened in the Big 12 the last 6 weeks is Trae Young goes nuts, but Oklahoma loses, and I'd be okay with that. But I would love to see an Oklahoma – if you have to go to Dayton, Marquette against Oklahoma – I'd get a kick out of it.
Well, A, that would be great television, right? Like, people might actually figure out where True TV is and go watch it.
Right.
And B, that's basically like an episode of The Black Mirror or something like that. Like, the same team playing itself or whatever. So that would be very interesting.
Yeah, I tried Black Mirror. Saw one episode. It was a little weird. I don't know if I'm going to try it again, but maybe I'll get back into it. But let's getting off topic. Let's transition out to teams you should be rooting for this week as a Marquette fan. We already touched on some of them. The favorites in the big leagues. Obviously, in the power conference leagues, you want the favorites to win because you don't want an underdog running the table and stealing a bid.
So unless you're Villanova.
Yeah.
We want Villanova to lose early.
Yeah, right. You want
early.
Yeah, you want Villanova to lose. But in the power leagues, in the ACC, you want Duke, Virginia, or North Carolina. In the Big 12, you want Kansas or Texas Tech. In the Pac-12, you want Arizona. You would settle for Arizona State, but you really want Arizona to win the Pac-12 tournament. SEC, you want Auburn, Tennessee, Kentucky, or Florida to win the SEC tournament. In the American, you definitely want one of these three and nobody else: Houston, Cincinnati, or Wichita State. probably Wichita State because they played Marquette. So I guess you'll take the strength of schedule boost, perhaps. And it's, plus, certainly, you don't want to root for Mick Cronin under any circumstances.
Nope.
So Houston, Cincinnati, or Wichita State, that's who you're rooting for in the American Conference tournament. So those are the look at the bigger leagues. And, of course, you want Marquette to win the Big East tournament.
Correct.
That's the one you want to root for. But but in the smaller leagues, these are some teams you really want to keep an eye on. Number one, top of the list, this is critical. You need Nevada to win the Mountain West because no one else in the Mountain West is even anywhere near the bubble, right? Like, there's like not even a team that would even be under consideration for an at-large. So if anybody other than Nevada wins the Mountain West tournament, that's bad news for Marquette because Nevada is comfortably in the field. They're like projected like a six seed right now. So if they lose, they're going to take an at-large bid away. And that's where you start talking about bid thieves, Phil. And that's always bad news for a team.
Yeah. So basically the bottom line is if Nevada loses any game in their conference tournament, doesn't matter who wins. It does, like, opponents don't matter. Nevada losing means Marquette's, if not out, close to out.
Yeah, bottom line, one more at-large bid has been snatched up because Nevada's going to take it while somebody else takes the automatic bid from the Mountain West. So definitely, definitely cheer for Nevada this week. In the Atlantic 10, you almost certainly want Rhode Island. You'd settle for St. Bonaventure because I think St. Bonaventure's getting in, but St. Bonaventure's kind of a bubble team. So if they lose early, that's probably a good thing because I don't know if they – like, I don't know. I wouldn't say St. Bonaventure's a lock, but you would settle for that because they're like almost in. They're probably like around I think most people project them as a team getting a bye right now. But you would prefer Rhode Island win. And that way, then St. Bonaventure stays on the bubble and maybe you're fighting with them for a spot. But anyone other than Rhode Island or St. Bonaventure in the Atlantic 10 is bad news. Temple scares me a little bit in the Atlantic 10. And there are some other teams that are, you know, they can be that can be competitive. And because, you know, they got some of those Big Five schools in there like LaSalle and St. Joe's. You never know, one of those teams could get hot for a week and snatch a bid. So you don't want that. But so Rhode Island, I actually like Dan Hurley. I think he's a pretty good coach. But
yeah, I think we need to leave it as just Rhode Island. If Bonaventure like takes the automatic, that's a problem because I'm not convinced that they're not on the same seed line as Marquette, which obviously means if they get the automatic, that that's another team that similar to the Nevada situation takes us out of a slot that we desperately need.
Right. And then, you know, you pretty much say this every year, out in the West Coast Conference, you need Gonzaga or St. Mary's. And that's looking pretty good because they're in separate semifinal games on Monday. They didn't play on Sunday. I guess that's because BYU's in the league and they can't play on Sunday. So that's why the WCC takes Sunday off. But so you need Gonzaga or St. Mary's to win the WCC. And pretty good chance of that happening because, again, they play in semifinals on Monday and that championship's decided on Tuesday. So Gonzaga or St. Mary's in there. Anyone else would be a bid thief because Gonzaga and St. Mary's. Gonzaga's definitely in. St. Mary's is probably in.
I think they're likely in either way.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. So yeah, Gonzaga. You'd prefer Gonzaga. You would settle for St. Mary's winning the WCC. A couple more I'll just throw out there. These are teams that, if they lose their conference tournament, they may be out, but sometimes the committee will show a little sympathy to these teams that have fringe resumes in like leagues that are otherwise one-bid leagues and might teams that like dominated their regular season. They are Middle Tennessee and Conference USA because no other CUSA team is going to get in other than Middle Tennessee. But if Middle Tennessee loses, suddenly they enter the at-large pool, and you would prefer not to have another team in the at-large pool to compete against resume-wise. So, again, Marquette may have a better resume than Middle Tennessee, but you just don't want to take that chance. So prefer Middle Tennessee win Conference USA. And as we're recording this on Sunday, so I guess this is going to be kind of a moot point by the time you guys listen to this, Loyola Chicago, you needed them to win the MVC tournament final. They're playing Illinois State, again, as we record this. So I guess it's kind of old news now, but you needed Loyola, because Loyola Chicago, if they lose that game, they might be out because Marquette probably has a better resume than they do. But again, that could be a situation where the committee looks at it and says, well, they had such a great regular season and they're right on the line of 11-12. Maybe we throw them a bone and put them in Dayton. So prefer Loyola Chicago win the Missouri Valley, and Middle Tennessee, another team you should probably root for if you're looking for somebody to root for in Conference USA.
Yeah, the only thing that really – I mean, I guess nobody's ever actually quantified it, but I think the committee does tend to lend a precedence on the bigger time, the bigger program schools. So I think your list of preferences are correct, but like Middle Tennessee and Loyola Chicago, I think we probably get the nod over them. One, because our resume seems better, and two, because I think the committee will make a precedence towards the bigger teams, especially this year, where there's been a lot of really good basketball in the power conferences and not so much in the kind of the mid majors, and or those teams that play their conference championships the week before Selection Sunday. All of those mid major conference championships that. Some of which play in New York City.
Yeah. Well done there. But, yeah, so if you're just looking for somebody to root for in Conference USA, take Middle Tennessee. And, again, other than that, general rooting guide, number one most important is Nevada in the Mountain West. Second most important is probably Rhode Island in the Atlantic 10, although you would settle for St. Bonaventure. You definitely want Rhode Island. And then Gonzaga or St. Mary's in the West Coast Conference, that championship is on Tuesday. And then as all the power leagues, just pick one of the top two or three teams, whoever you like. Duke, Virginia, Carolina, Kansas, Arizona, Auburn, Tennessee, Kentucky, Florida. Need one of them. And probably Wichita State and the American would be most ideal there. So that's a look at your rooting guide. Got it? Everybody got it?
I think we got it.
Good. And does Owen have it? Is he good?
Owen is very adamant towards Nevada. Yes, Owen has decided to wake up early and contribute to the podcast. He'll probably replace me in 6 months once I get the other milk to him.
Very good. Since Owen is anxious to get out of here, let's just wrap up with this really quick.
Cheer for your favorite team?
Let's wrap up with this really quick. A quick shout out to the Marquette women, who are they are moving on to the Big East Conference Tournament. They're trying to win the conference tournament for the second straight year, and they won the regular season, the first ever Big East regular season championship for Marquette women's basketball. Coach Carolyn Keeger doing a great job with the women's team, so shout out to them and good luck to them. They're definitely going to be in the women's tournament, and hopefully they can win a second consecutive Big East conference tournament.
Yeah, and that's a program struggled a couple of years ago with Carolyn Krieger coming in has really kind of turn the program around, and they might, even regardless of how they perform in the Big East tournament, I mean they might be a top four seeding in the women's tournament. So
they're in great shape, so kudos to them, and hopefully Marquette can have similar success in the Big East tournament this week. Quickly, Phil, two predictions for the week. One, how far does Marquette go in the Big East tournament, and then the big one, in or out Selection Sunday?
I'm gonna go reverse. I think they're in. So I think at a minimum they're going to go 1-1, and I think they get in. I think there's going to be enough chalk in the conference tournaments this season that it's going to lend Marquette to be able to get in. As far as predictions for the games, I think they beat DePaul. I think they, you know, this is a team, especially the way the Georgetown and Creighton games, realizes that these are absolutely must wins. So I think they beat DePaul, and they've proven in both games that they can kind of hang with Villanova. So my head wants to say, no, they're not, but my heart says they are going to beat Villanova. So just to be different, I think they go 2-0 in the first two games and then lose in the quarters? The quarterfinals?
That would be the semifinals. Marquette's only made the semifinals twice since they've joined the Big East in 2006.
Right.
So they haven't had many good runs in the Big East tournament. I think they're due for one.
Well, this is the team built for that, right? A team that can shoot the lights out. All they need to do is catch hot for two games.
Just be hot. But I'm going to go this way. I'm going to say the most likely scenario, and that is a 1-1. Performance, beat DePaul. You have to beat DePaul. Just don't even.
It's not even a thing. If we lose to DePaul, then we need to go warm up the Bradley Center lights.
Yeah, absolutely. So beat DePaul. I'll say a close loss to Villanova, but I'm also going to send some good karma. Even though I've said that you need that magic number of 11, I'm going to say it's going to be just barely enough. And I'm going to say they're going to be like one of the last teams in. They're going to go to Dayton, so they're going to get selected. They're just going to barely be in. So I'll say they beat DePaul. close loss at Villanova, but maybe they show enough as the committee is keeping an eye on them that they're an exciting team to watch and they're a team that should be in. So I think it's just going to be so close. I mean, they are just a 50-50 shot, so I'm going to be on the more positive side of 50-50, and I'm going to say they're gonna get in, but we're going to be biting our nails.
Which is a considerable change for you from the last 3 weeks, right? I mean, you've basically been saying they're out the last 3 weeks.
I've long said that 9-9 by itself is not enough, and I think they needed to do more. I am hesitant to say that just beating DePaul is going to be enough to have them on the right side. It's just going to be so close, but I'm just trying to be positive here and saying that they're going to be in if they can just avoid a bad loss against DePaul. But yeah, for me to feel good on Selection Sunday, they need to beat Villanova.
And then
I'll be really optimistic on Selection Sunday that they're getting in. I'm going to be pessimistic but hopeful if they beat DePaul and then lose to Villanova. It's like, man, it's like, I'm not sure they did enough, but I'm just going to cross my fingers and hope I'm proven wrong. But
if they go one and one though, my prediction is they are playing in Dayton.
Yeah, I am too. They're not going to get a bye if they go one and one. They're not going to jump up that high. So be prepared for a trip to Dayton. That's my prediction for the week. Hey, one more quick note before we get out of here, Phil, and I'm sure Owen is interested to hear this too. There is a recruiting note to keep an eye on over the next few weeks. A five-star point guard from 2019, Ashton Hagans, is decommitted from Georgia and is going to reclassify to 2018. And the entire Marquette staff went and visited him this week, the day after he decommitted from Georgia. So they are anxiously trying to add a point guard for next year, and Hagans, they're going all in on him. So keep an eye on that. I'm not sure how close they are to really being in, you know, in the discussion for him. I know North Carolina is trying to get him too. He's still considering Georgia, depending on what happens with the coach there. But that is a name to keep an eye on over the next week if you're a recruiting nut, although I think we're all kind of dialed in on bubble talk. But for those of you who are anxious about next year and adding a point guard, keep an eye on Ashton Hagans, five-star guard out of Georgia, who's probably going to reclassify to 2018.
And we've done pretty good with reclassified guards.
We have. We've also done well with point guards who have decommitted from schools in Arizona. Another guy you can keep on, a 2018 point guard, Brandon Williams, decommitted from Arizona this week because of all the fallout there. Although I haven't seen any indication that Marquette has reached out to Brandon Williams, but having met him, I can say he's a guy you would definitely love to have on your roster. He's probably going to end up at Gonzaga because Gonzaga was in his Final Five the first time, along with Kansas, USC, and UCLA, along with Arizona, of course. If I had to guess, he'd probably go the safe route and end up at Gonzaga. But if Marquette reaches out, I think that would be a good idea, especially if you don't think you're going to get Ashton Hagans. But I think Marquette's all in on Hagans right now. Not sure they get him, but we'll see if they can talk him into taking an official visit whenever his season ends in Georgia and get up there and get him to Milwaukee. So that's the last note. I guess that's all we got. Got a lot to talk about today, Phil. And Here's to me hopefully being wrong about the season ending at 9-9. But
it's going to be – I hope everyone has their anti-anxiety meds and or large quantities of alcohol on hand, because the next week is going to be – it's basically the personification of the Samuel L. Jackson meme from Jurassic Park. Hold on to your butts.
Hold on to your butts, folks. It is going to be a wild week. Hopefully Mark can get two or three wins in New York and make it easy on us, but we know better. They're not going to do that. It's going to be a sweat all the way until Selection Sunday.
There is no way this team takes it easy on us.
Yeah, they just wouldn't do that. Please, and just please don't lose to DePaul.
Whatever. Just don't. Please. Not again.
Get all the antacids ready this week, folks. You're going to need them. Until next time, I guess we can just wrap up with this. Follow us on Twitter. Give us your feedback. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is M-O-O-F. That's three O's. F-23. Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. Post your comments, your feedback on cracksidewalks.com. Leave your comments there. We appreciate that. Rate us and review us on Apple Podcasts. Always appreciate your feedback on there. Be sure to subscribe. And we have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page as well. Antacids ready to go, Phil?
Yeah, so far, and we got Owen ready to go with his cheering. He was yesterday in the game. The thing I forgot to mention, kept screaming "Shoot it, Rousey." So I mean, maybe that contributed.
Maybe Rousey heard him, but yeah. Maybe he's been hearing him for the last 2 years.
Yeah, that's he's had Owen in his head for like his entire Marquette career, apparently.
Excellent. All right. Enjoy the week, everyone. We'll talk to you next week after Selection Sunday. Seashells and balloons. And antacids.